You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
The three main spamming countries are the United States, China, and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Coonan, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on ePray, and you get a whole service just on it.
How does it go?
IE7, you were having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What did you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
No, it's not hard at all.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm your host, Andrew McColl. Australians have always been known as early adapters when it comes to technology. The ubiquitous mobile phone is a classic example of our eagerness to embrace mobile communications, with recent reports claiming a 4-to-1 ratio of mobile phones to Australian citizens. But is our tech savviness doing us the injustice as one of the biggest piracy nations on the planet? Maybe so. In a report released this month by the Australian Institute of Criminology, Australians now hold the unenviable title as the number one pirates in the world when it comes to downloading TV programs. An Envisional study found that Australia was the second largest downloader of online pirated TV shows in the world, around 15.6%, behind the UK 18.5%, but ahead of the US at 7.3%. Australians were the leading downloaders of pirated TV programs on a per capita basis. The report found that the increased bandwidth take-up, technological advances, and a high demand for US-based TV shows are some of the reasons why piracy has boomed. 70% of the piracy occurs through BitTorrent. The survey found that the top TV shows downloaded were 24, Stargate Atlantis, The Simpsons, Enterprise, Stargate SG-1, OC, Smallville, Desperate Housewives, Battlestar Galactica, and Lost. BitTorrent is a protocol designed for transferring files, which is very popular for TV program downloads. There are no Australian-based surveys of BitTorrent usage or TV program downloading. However, given the globalised nature of BitTorrent usage and the operation of their so-called global communities, the results of international surveys are likely to be at least indicative of Australian usage. Furthermore, an examination of anecdotal information on BitTorrent usage and TV program downloading suggests that Australians are downloading TV shows in increasing quantities. Australians are also uploading locally produced programs and segments of these programs for others to download. The million-dollar question is, are the broadcasters in Australia responsible for the piracy epidemic? Or is it just because Australians have the technology and they feel the urge or need to use it? Take a look at the broadband packages on offer in the Australian marketplace. The average web surfer and email user wouldn't need any more than a gig or so in a month, yet data usage plans are now offered in the hundreds of gigs, and it doesn't take rocket science to work out who these plans are aimed at. As broadband speeds increase in this country and video on demand takes off with the rollout of services like ABC's iView, the equivalent of climate change will take hold of the internet. Video shops will go online, content will be streamed from all over the world, video sites like YouTube will become realistic content providers and a real threat to traditional broadcasters. And finally, hardware in the home will demand internet connectivity. After all, Sony have just released the first TV with an Ethernet port on the back and a web browser of sorts built in, and they won't be the last. If I was a terrestrial broadcaster, I'd be looking for a new business model for beyond 2010.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Australians are number one when it comes to TV downloads. Facebook can be bad for your career. Seoul jumps off the Terrier ship. Financial malware gets smarter. The TIO complaints are on the rise. And Telstra dumps excess fees on some broadband plans. First up, though, here's the latest happenings from the Tech Talk news desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Microsoft launches a huge anti-piracy effort, Apple profits soar on iPhone sales, but Yahoo results are disappointing. Seoul TPG drops out of Terrier, and bosses use Facebook to keep an eye on employees. This is Tech Talk News. Telecommunications company Dodo Australia has been fined $147,000 after the Australian Communications and Media Authority alleged that an offshore call centre made marketing calls on its behalf to numbers on the Do Not Call register. It's the largest penalty paid since the Do Not Call register legislation took effect in May 2007. The fine came after the ACMA investigated numerous consumer complaints against Dodo and issued an infringement notice against the company. ACMA Chairman Chris Chapman says Dodo avoided larger penalties by cooperating with the investigation and dealing with the matter before it got to court. In addition to the stiff fine, Dodo has also agreed to a number of enforceable undertakings that set out the steps it will take to comply with the Do Not Call register legislation. Chapman says the case provides lessons for all businesses that use telemarketing. Put simply, if a business decides to use offshore call centres to make calls, it will be responsible for the calls that those call centres make. Microsoft is hitting out against pirates in a new initiative it has labelled a Global Anti-Piracy Day, taking simultaneous legal action in over 48 countries. The company is pursuing cases in the federal court against individuals for copyright infringement as part of its global crackdown. According to the computer giant, the growth of counterfeit products being sold online is something that needs to be stopped. In a statement, Microsoft said, "Software piracy and counterfeiting is a global trade, and Microsoft is committed to working with others around the world to stay a step ahead of this criminal industry. Fighting piracy is about protecting consumers who think they are buying legitimate software, as well as protecting the interests of the legitimate IT businesses." It has been estimated that a reduction in piracy by 10% over the next 4 years would generate an additional 3,929 jobs in Australia. According to the recent IDC Piracy Impact Study of 2008, the reduction would result in $1.9 billion in local industry revenue and $4.3 billion in additional GDP. Computer giant Apple has released its September quarter results, recording a profit boost of 26% thanks to the record iPhone and Macintosh computer sales. The group's sales rose 27% to US$7.9 billion in the 3 months ending on the 27th of September, with net profits rising from $904 million to $1.1 billion. Apple shares rose from US$10.58 to $102 after the announcement. CEO Steve Jobs said in a statement that Apple just reported one of the best quarters in its history, with a spectacular performance by the iPhone. He said they sold more phones than BlackBerry manufacturer Research in Motion. The group's iPhone device, originally released last year and updated with a 3G version in July, sold over 6.8 million units during the quarter, while 2.61 million Mac computers were shipped. But it hasn't all been smooth sailing for Apple. The company's shares have dropped 54% this year. But Jobs is confident that the company can weather the downturn. He said he didn't know how the economic downturn will affect Apple, but at least he was armed with the strongest product line in their history. Meanwhile, Yahoo is struggling after reporting a 64% drop in profit and announcing plans to slash 10% of its workforce. The group's sales rose 3% to US$1.3 billion for the same quarter. Third quarter income fell to $54.3 million from $151.3 million, while the company's shares fell 79 cents to $12.07. The group is suffering after walking away from a takeover bid from Microsoft, and its stocks had fallen by 48% this year. While Yahoo is doing well in the display ad market, its promotional advertisements, which run alongside search results, are not performing well. TPG Seoul has pulled out of the Terrier Consortium, saying the nation doesn't need a national broadband network. Seoul Executive Chairman David Teo said in a statement, "Seoul is not convinced about the immediate need for a national broadband network, especially in the current economic environment." He said that Seoul's customers currently had access to speeds averaging over 14 megabits per second, faster than the speed sought by the national broadband network. He went on to say that when you look at Seoul's ADSL 2 Plus network performance, and you take into account that Telstra has rolled out an ADSL 2 Plus network around the country, there must be a serious question about whether there is any need for Australian taxpayers to make a sizable investment in the national broadband network. Michael Egan said that Sol's withdrawal had not been a surprise since no representatives of the companies had attended any of Terrier's meetings, and there had been no engagement at all. He said he'd never met any of them, and it wouldn't affect Terrier's bid in any way. Terrier could well be the only bidder, with Telstra still adamant that it would not bid if separation was not taken off the table. Egan did not agree with Sol's reason for dropping out. He said, "It's like saying we shouldn't have rolled out an electricity network last century because some people were happy with lamplight." And finally, an Australian call centre employee has been caught malingering after his boss checked his Facebook status. Kyle Doyle, 21, is currently facing an internal investigation after he called in sick when he updated his Facebook status bar to read, "Kyle Doyle is not going to work. I'm still trashed. Sickie, woo." Unfortunately for Doyle, his boss was also a friend on Facebook and saw the incriminating status report. He emailed Doyle and requested a doctor's note to prove that the sick day was required, without mentioning the Facebook entry, but saying that his line manager was under the impression that the day off was not for medical reasons. And that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
How about this? A Brisbane ISP, that's an internet service provider, is going to charge customers to make complaints.
You're talking about the Federal Communications Minister.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
Senator the Honourable Helen Coonan is the manager of opposition business in the Senate and no longer has mystical powers.
Oh, slapping a speed camera in here, isn't it?
Sorry.
If you weren't familiar with subliminal advertising,
it's because it's working.
Look, I think subliminal advertising has a place.
Well, we have this sort of spectrum of media right now, TV, film, video, that basically becomes one media platform. And while there's many differences, that then some senses, they will share more and more in common with each other.
Well, see, you've got to be wary that Windows reboots, Mac foists software upon you, and Ubuntu does nothing.
So you've chosen the right operating system.
You are causing the problem.
I can't.
You are where all this spam is coming from.
The dock. Yes, they do. Mm. The dock down the bottom. Yes.
Who, Greenpeace?
No.
I don't see.
So the letter of the law is all that applies. No other ethics.
No, it's advertising.
It's advertising. What ethical
where did ethics come into this?
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm your host, Andrew McComb. Thank you very much for coming past this evening. Thanks to the panel that have arrived too, Dr. Ron, all one of you.
Well, it's both of us, isn't it?
It is. It's a cosy environment here in the studio this evening.
It is cosy.
We do have others that are transiting here as we speak. Don't play with your microphone on air, please, Dr. Ron.
Sorry.
dear, what a week it's been.
What a week.
Technologically, financially, all sorts of things. So I think as I was twittering earlier on...
You've been twittering more and more lately. It's very good.
I found the Twitter button and I do my best twittering. I've come to a conclusion in the wee small hours of the morning.
Have you got it yet? Do you get the whole concept?
Look, yes, the Honourable Mr. Turnbull gave me a good insight into why you shouldn't Twitter.
Yeah, that's why you shouldn't. Don't look at what Mr. Turnbull's doing.
Is that the police? Everybody's getting in on it. When are we going to see Kev, baby, up there twittering?
Dear. Let's not.
I haven't got many followers. I thought that was pretty amazing.
We can get by without that.
Can we? Mm. All right. Well, let's move right along. Yep. Hey, interesting what you can do with Twitter these days. You noticed on the bottom of the Tech Talk Radio page, you can actually embed a Twitter link, a feed.
It's quite clever. It's a Twitter badge. You can put it on your blog or your website. It's a little... Oh, it's just a code snippet, isn't it?
It is.
Yes, copy
or a couple
and paste
of lines of code. And whenever you tweet, bang, there it is on your website. Very handy for updating your web page. It keeps it current, which is what Google likes. All those sorts of things.
You can make it just appear automatically. So when you look at someone's... When you look at your blog page, someone looks at your blog or your website, it's got your current Twitter status there. It's quite clever.
Very good.
Yes. It's Malcolm Turnbull. Join Twitter. That's what we're referring to.
For those of you, you might have heard it in the news
before.
Did you mention it in the news? I think I did.
I'm not sure, did you?
Anyway, we'll talk about it later this evening.
He's the opposition leader in Australia, and he's now set himself up a Twitter profile, for better or worse.
I don't know whether he would know how to use it. I suspect one of his media minders would be sitting there on the keyboard blogging away. At least, the thing I love about Twitter is it's very succinct and to the point. 128 characters, and that's it.
That's it. That's it. It's all you've got.
And it's good. It means that you can cut through the waffle. And if you're looking for a bit of a news headline or something like that, bang, it's good. Social networking stuff, anyway.
It is. It's a micro-blogging site is how it's been explained.
Oh, yes. That's very good. Anyway,
lots of interesting news happening this week. Piracy, big news in Australia again.
Come and hop on the pirate ship SS Australia, you were saying in the intro.
That's the one.
I like that description.
Nothing better to do with our spare time and our bandwidth than to download movies from the United States.
Well, this quiet little backwater down here on the other side of the world, no one's really ever paid us much attention. I think we've got away fairly unscathed for a long time, haven't we?
Oh, yes. Anyway, we'll talk about that on tonight's show. We've also got some NBN news, National Broadband Network. I reckon that's not going to happen. I'm just tipping. Everyone's going to walk away from it very shortly.
We're going to be condemned to ADSL2 for the rest of our lives, you think?
I think so. We'll talk about that later on in the show as well.
All right.
Microsoft have given absolutely everyone grief tonight.
Hey, what happened to your FTP server on the weekend?
That's not just mine. That's not just mine. We'll talk about that in the show too. Good on you, Microsoft.
Thanks, Microsoft.
It's a bit like, you know, foisting things on your system. Well, they did that with the automatic update, and I think most people's servers gave them grief today. I was just looking at the email coming in before tonight showing you all the emergency updates that are being done by hosting companies around the country at the moment.
Lots of large corporates are sending out emails saying, we apologise for our service outage, but rather coincidental, it's all just happened at exactly the same time.
So we'll have a bit of a chat about that. We've got the internet filtering. That's sort of been lying under a rock till recent times, and even an email from a listener tonight sort of saying, you've got to talk about this, you've got to talk about this. So we will.
Yeah, my father sent me some links on the email today. He said you have to talk about this.
What else? We're also going to be talking about Mozilla, the makers of Firefox, snubbing Android.
They've snubbed Android.
They have indeed. That's Google's new, you know, OS for portable devices and things like that.
Yep.
Yes, and internet voting starting now for the Americans too. For the American election. Which is Tuesday week. And it's already been, you know, all sorts of issues and gaffes and things like that happening there at the moment. So,
yeah, but if they were, at least they've got a plan.
Yes.
At least they're giving it a go, which is more than we can say for what's happening here.
And to top it off tonight, we're going to be talking about, or Adam Turner will be talking about premium SMS services and a few pitfalls you've got to watch out for.
I saw him having a bit of a rant during the week.
Yes.
About his SIM card, his data card.
We'll talk about that.
We'll
talk about that. And also, Telstra, watch your bill, ladies and gentlemen. Keep a very close eye on your bill from the telco. We'll talk about that coming up. Whoa, what a jam-packed show we've got tonight. So if you'd like to contribute or participate or come along and say good day to us, you can while we're to air live. And you just got to come to chat.techtalkradio.com.au. You don't have to sign up and do anything like that. Just come along and have a chat to us. Just fill your name in and come up and say good day. We're all there now.
Operators are standing by.
They are indeed. Yes. So let's start off, Dr. Ron. How was your week? Did you have any? You're obviously having technical issues over there. There's more cables.
Talk amongst
yourselves. Looks like you're sewing over there. What are you doing with the cable?
I'm right now. That's it. Yeah, there I am.
Well, you just need to get
your
headphones.
It's a bit of a rush, isn't it? We need to start. If we started the show half an hour later, we'd still be rushed, wouldn't we?
Absolutely.
Wouldn't matter what time you started the show, we'd always be rushed. Not enough hours in the day. No, I had a good week. Now, I've got some bouquets where bouquets are due.
Okay, bouquet away.
We spoke a few weeks ago, and in fact, our US correspondent Lydia Davis had a good rant a few weeks ago about Telstra's, or more specifically, Telstra Big Pond's foray into Twitter. We're talking about Twitter.
How can we forget?
Yeah. And she was saying, and I said at the time, that what a joke. Their status updates are just robot-generated, automated garbage. They've completely missed the point of Twitter, and it just looks really, really bad. I've got a very good news story in regards to Telstra and Twitter.
Yeah, do tell.
Let me go back a few weeks. I'm in the unfortunate position at the moment of managing a deceased estate. What I wanted to do was to cancel some telephone lines. And I thought, oh, well, the best way to do that is to get onto Telstra. And
so you allocated a couple of hours to make a call?
I did.
Yeah.
That was completely fruitless. I just, my call was valuable to them, and I sat in the queue for 40 minutes and gave up. Then tried to ring them after I'd about what I thought was during, should be their business hours, 5 p.m. or 6 p.m., and I was told that the call centre was closed and to ring back during business hours. I thought, God, it's got to be business hours somewhere in Australia at 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time.
You would have thought so.
On the Melbourne side of the country, there should be someone somewhere in the country that can answer them a call, but apparently not. So I went to the web form feedbacky thing and clicked through 18 different pages until finally I got somewhere I could type some free text. I said, I'm managing a deceased estate. I need to cancel some telephone services. Can you please send me the relevant forms or explain the process? I got a less than helpful reply saying, you have to go into a Telstra shop and get a form.
Oh, so this was on a chat thing.
Yeah, well, it was the email form, the email inquiry. Like, it was just a web form.
Oh, okay.
But I think it actually...
Is that the web form they referred everybody onto with Twitter
recently?
Correct. Oh, okay, yeah.
And so I reply back and I said, look, it's just a form. I'm sure you must have some sort of document management system where you've got every publicly available document available to you. Can't you just email me the thing? I'll print it out and I'll fax it back, or I'll complete it and I'll scan it or whatever and I'll send it back to you.
That gives you a paper trail with the telephone company. They don't like that.
So the answer the next day or 24 hours later was, no, it's not electronic. You must go to a Telstra shop and fill out a piece of paper. So I replied back, where is my Telstra shop? Nearest Telstra shop with my suburb. Thank you for your inquiry to Telstra. Please go to telstra.com for all the information you need about finding your nearest Telstra shop.
I'm waiting for the bouquet here.
Oh, God! Here at Telstra! So I thought, before I walk into a Telstra shop and resort to actually human face-to-face communications, I'll try Twitter. Now, I know that they're the Big Pond team.
After all the slanging that was going on, you thought you'd give
The benefit of the doubt. I'll see if they're useful. I'll see if they're helpful. Because I had noticed over the past few weeks, they had started becoming more personable with their communications on Twitter. But what have I got to lose? I haven't got anything to lose.
Not according to the TIO.
Dear Big Pond people on Twitter, I'm in this position. I need to cancel some services. Can you help me? I get a reply back from Ben, whose last name I discovered is Burbeck, Ben Burbeck at the Big Pond team. Extremely helpful. He's done very well. Ben said, hi, Ron. Sorry to hear that you're cancelling services. I'll help you in any way I can, even if it's not related to a Big Pond inquiry, which it's not.
No, it's a Telstra inquiry.
It's a Telstra inquiry. So I sent him a direct message, and a direct message means that it's not public. So I didn't want people knowing the personal details of what I was doing.
So you put the at symbol in front of it, don't you?
Well, you can, but there's also a tab where it says direct messages, and you can send a private message using Twitter. Yeah.
Okay.
So I said, hi, Ben, here's a private message further to my query. Can you please send me the form? You must have it on your system there somewhere electronically. This is the reason why I'm cancelling the services. It's not out of choice. It's because this is what I'm doing. I have to do it. He replied back the next day with an electronic version of the form in my inbox. Dear Ron, sorry to hear about the situation you're in. Here's the form you need. If there's any other questions, email me directly. Best wishes, Ben. Ben, you've done extremely well. You are the one person in Telstra who I've dealt with of recent times has actually been helpful. And if Twitter keeps going this way, and if the Big Pond team is able to service Telstra customers this way, then using Twitter like this is going to be extremely useful. So I'm going to write an updated blog post very soon. So well done, Telstra. Well done, Big Pond team.
Well done, Telstra. That's excellent. Well, obviously, maybe all the to-ing and fro-ing hasn't fallen on deaf ears of recent times, and maybe they are becoming a little bit more service-aware. I know the Commonwealth Bank use a lot of these social networking sites too, and you get a lot of real-time response, you know, banking-related responses and things like that too.
Well, it was very helpful. I mean, I wasn't sitting in a telephone queue not being answered for hours on end. It meant that I wasn't battling with people on the other end of web forms, and I wasn't trying to contend with idiots on email saying, oh, if you want help from us on email, please go to telstra.com and visit the links there. Mm. So they did a good job. They were able to help me, and they were able to help me in a timely fashion.
That's excellent.
There you go. That's my good news Telstra story for the week.
Well done, that man. Mm. Well done, Ben. Congratulations. Yes, you're the man at Telstra.
You are, yes. If you need something done by Telstra, get onto Twitter at the moment. They're doing well.
All right, let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the mainstream media at the moment, the Australian government and internet filtering. This evening I got an email from Jeff Halperin, one of our Tech Talk Radio listeners, saying, guys, I'm sending you this PR because I think it's a very relevant story and of interest to Tech Talk Radio listeners. The short version is that the government, i.e. Mr. Stephen Conroy of the ABCDEF department, is attempting to push through mandatory filtering of all internet content in Australia. He goes, that's right, it's not opt-in, it's not opt-out, but it's mandatory on all traffic. Needless to say, Whirlpool has been running many, many forums and things like that about it, so you can go and read up there.
Well, we've had headlines in the last day or so with headlines like net filters will block gambling sites and Australian net filters to block porn sites.
It's interesting, isn't it? We've discussed this in recent times on the show, but internet filtering is not really the way to go. It's more a means to an end, but it's more a political means to an end, not so much a practical means to an end. Would you agree?
I would agree. It's by implementing a system like that, the government, I suppose, really wants to be seen as doing something. They don't know what to do and what the most effective thing is to do. So instead, they're just deciding, well, we'll do this because it's something we can do in the short term. We look like we're actually trying to make an effort, but it's not the answer.
Yes. So rather than slowing the internet down and making it unusable, we've also got NBN concerns this week too, the National Broadband Network concerns, where It's interesting to see that, you know, Terrier, you know, the competition to Telstra,
yes,
in a lot of respects, it's the there's really two bids that have gone in of substantial size.
Consortium, isn't it?
That's right. Mm. Anyway, there's some members of that have pulled out, which is TPG and Soul Communications and Transact, which is the Canberra-based provider, have pulled out. Now, TPG and Soul's excuse for pulling out is that Australia doesn't need the NBN. What do you make of that?
Australia doesn't need the NBN.
That's right.
Right. Right. So we'll just use our existing telephone network to
apparently,
end of days.
You look at TPG and these sort of guys, potentially they're servicing, or they're cherry picking, as they say in the trade, looking for customers who are in a well cabled, well connected area, such as a metro area or a fairly sizable regional area. And they're just playing the game out there. They're going to say, well, if you're within kiwi of an exchange, great. But for the man on the land, the farmers, the people out in outback Central Australia and stuff like that, which are worlds away from a fairly high-speed telephone exchange, this is not really potentially going to be an option. Now, when Conroy initially launched or touted the NBN, a lot of punters came out. Punt is probably the wrong word. A lot of professionals probably came out and said, well, it's the last...
I didn't get it right the first
time. Maybe. It's the last 5% of the customers that need to be serviced that are the most expensive. And the NBN is going to, you know, suck a lot of money in from the purses of the public to service these guys. So, I don't know, maybe they're becoming a bit more city-centric. What about the effect of the global crunch, the credit crunch at the moment, because a lot of organisations are going or foreclosing. A lot of money has now not dried up, it has dried up. It's even affected me business-wise with dealings with some American companies of recent times that are saying, I'm sorry, but the money that we had allocated for your job is now no longer available. Is that going to play a bit of a major role or major influence in the NBN not happening as speedily as it was? Because I think if Conroy's tinkering with filtering, I think he should be looking at the, you know, it's a bit like the credit crunch. let's talk about, you know, propping up the network rather than filtering the network because they haven't built it yet.
Yeah, yeah. So Stephen Conroy obviously is the senator, the Honourable Stephen Conroy. He's the minister it's his correct title, Minister for Broadband and Communications and the Digital Economy in Australia. Now, AAPT pulled out. Who did you say pulled out just before, a moment ago, like this week? Or
We've had two this week. Soul, TPG, which is one and the same,
yeah,
I believe.
Yep.
And Transact pulled
Transact,
out today, which is
right.
The Canberran equivalent of a fairly sizable,
very high public
speed
utility.
Yes.
Someone else that AAPT pulled out a week ago or a couple of weeks ago as well. So, yeah, they're dropping like flies at the moment.
And getting back to the filtering side of things too, apparently there's a lot of cover-up going on at the moment too, which I don't think we've heard the end of yet. The federal government is attempting to silence critics of its controversial plan to censor the internet, which experts say will break the internet while doing little to stop people from accessing illegal material such as kiddie porn and stuff like that. So internet providers and the government's own tests have found that presently available filters are not capable of adequately distinguishing between legal and illegal content and can be degrading internet speeds by up to 86%. So that's a lot.
Well, it does, because
if you're on a 10 megabit per second, that takes you down to 2 megabits per second.
Well, the way that it works is it has to not just pass all of the information from one point to another, it actually has to actively monitor the data that it's passing, and it has to reference some sort of table or some sort of blacklist that says this information is allowed, this information isn't allowed, and it's going to slow things down in an enormous way. It really is. Even if you just think about them blocking illegal content, and even then you've got a minefield in terms of what's illegal here and what's illegal in other countries, and you've got a whole range of ethical issues, but still, it's just the way that it has to work technically is just going to degrade the very limited service that we have now.
Documents obtained by the Sydney Morning Herald shows that the minister's office is trying to bully ISP staff into suppressing their criticism of the plan too. Because everyone who's technically with it, even the guys on the forum and the chats and stuff like that, go, no, filtering will never work. And as Graham Callaghan has always been a fairly vocal advocate of, is filtering starts with the PC in the living room and making sure that people don't end up in the right spot.
It starts with education, doesn't
it? Yeah.
If only Graham was here.
I think he is.
He is?
He's rolled in the door, literally. And in fact, there's a man sitting next to you. Who's this guy here next to you, do you know, Dr. I can sort of remember his face a little bit.
JD, welcome back.
JD.
Oh, there you are. You need a sick note for the last few weeks.
I have indeed. In fact, my throat's still a bit croaky, but that's okay.
That's not bad, actually.
Yeah. Good to see you.
And you.
How's
everyone.
How's your trip?
Oh, the trip was good.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been away? I thought you were just having a sickie.
No, I was in Brisbane for a little while.
Like that guy on the Facebook status, yeah.
Absolutely.
But what I discovered is when you're using an XG connection, you can listen to the show, but you can't try to use Skype at the same time. So that was interesting.
Did you try to Skype us?
I did. Well, I tested it and decided not to.
Wasn't too good, huh? It broke up a bit. That woman on the she broke up.
She did. She sounded great. I sounded rubbish. So.
The uplink. Oh, there you go. Graham Callaghan, good evening. How are you going?
Good evening, Andrew. I'm going well. It's a little bit late.
It's good. I was about to say, has everyone got Dr. Ron watches here affected by daylight saving? They're half an hour early for the beginning of the show, maybe. Goodness me.
Real life gets in the way sometimes.
Look, if you've been tending to Microsoft dilemmas today, I can understand that. How's your servers been handling?
Mine have been going all right, actually.
You didn't upgrade, right?
Yeah, you didn't do the mandatory upgrade.
That's one thing is I always install the upgrades when I'm at the machines. I don't let the servers do automatic updates. But the ones I've done so far have survived it, so...
Maybe that's the problem. I let mine do automatic updates because I've got other things I've got to do. And all three of my servers this morning that I maintain had the same problem.
What exactly did they do?
They failed to shut down properly when they did the restart.
Oh, okay.
And as a result, you walk in there and
sitting there half shut down.
Half shut down and no services functioning. And people like Dr. Ron saying, why can't I do this? Where have you gone? Because it shuts down half your services and leaves bare bones things running. So that was the case on... three boxes this morning for me. Mm. You can always tell because the phone rings ballistically at about 9 o'clock in the morning. And I looked at the service. Yeah. I said, I know what that's all about. So restart, restart, restart. And the phone stopped ringing. It's amazing how that happens.
Yeah, it's very unusual of Microsoft to have rushed out an out-of-band update that they must have been something seriously concerned about. Yeah,
I'm just going to jump over to my email client. I remember. Sorry, yes. I'm the delayed Twittery thing. I've got literally in the last few minutes two emails from providers. One came in from Web Central, Melbourne IT. Saying we're writing to you to advise you of urgent upgrades that will be done to our servers tonight and things like that. So, yes, a lot of it out there at the moment. So if anyone who's on auto updates for Windows servers, watch out.
Yeah.
So anyway, we'll talk a little bit more about that later on.
Mm.
Apple.
You were talking about, just before you move on, you were talking about TV piracy.
Oh, yeah, we haven't really touched on that just yet.
Haven't we got to that yet?
Okay. No.
I heard that mentioned in the intro, sorry, while I was driving here.
Did you? Yeah, we touched briefly on it in a bit of a tease, but now that you mention it, we'll put Apple to a side for a sec.
Sorry about that.
No, it's all good.
Were you listening to yourself on the radio while you were driving here?
I was listening to you lot on the radio.
He was hoping he was going to be there, but he just wasn't.
Get confused with all the
time zones.
Oddly
enough, I wasn't on the radio until after I got here.
Yeah. I think that's right.
All right. Piracy is rampant in Australia. A recent report which has been published on the Australian Institute of Criminology, and you can go there and read the report. It's very interesting. I can recommend it to everyone. Just a bit of a browse.
Have a look at that later on. Yeah.
It's aic.gov.au. On the left-hand side, about the third one down, second one down, you'll see the IP report, the intellectual property reports on the left-hand side there.
Okay.
And have a bit of a read. There's nothing that's sort of really surprising. It's just the amount of the quantity of these people, what they're up to is makes you sort of stop and wonder. I think, as I said in the beginning of the opening of the show, you look at bandwidth usage, and your average web surfy person and email checker would probably be maybe a gig tops. That's all you need for a whole month.
Oh, it depends what you're doing. If you're running a business and you've got a dozen machines connected behind your thing all doing Windows updates, or if you're running a WSUS server that's doing Windows Server updates...
I pull down a lot of video podcasts like Dignation and...
Yeah, but I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about web.
I often download whole operating systems like Fedora or Ubuntu.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about
that. And their legitimate usage of BitTorrent. Yeah. I use BitTorrent to do that. It's important to note that BitTorrent is not a piracy tool.
No. That's a very valid point.
BitTorrent is perfectly useful for quite legitimate purposes.
Yes, but what I was trying to say before, if you're just doing mail and email, you could probably use Next-G safely and, you know, check it with your mobile data
card.
Well,
not by the time you do your Windows updates, though, because they...
Oh, no.
It would take forever.
Yeah, especially with Apple installing 80-odd gigabyte applications on you without.
Yeah, mobile me. He just pops up in your control
just
panel
arrives
without.
Out of nowhere.
Yeah,
good on
so,
them.
So yeah,
we'll talk about them in a minute.
That's
so.
One point.
You
but
can
I can
chuckle,
tell you,
JD.
I can tell you, without a shadow of a doubt, the top five reasons why Australians are the biggest TV pirates.
Reason number one.
Reason number one is an easy one. Reason number one, Channel 7.
Can't get it from anywhere else.
Channel 7, the way they treat their viewers.
Number two?
Reasons number two to four, in no particular order, are Channels 9, 10, the ABC and the SBS.
He should have gone backwards, shouldn't he?
So you are, and I sort of alluded to this in the opening of the show as well, are the broadcasters responsible, to which you're saying yes?
Absolutely.
And I must admit, I'd have to agree with you, because in a lot of respects, the broadcasters, they have their own agendas,
yep,
and they have their reasoning for doing things, but
they put spoilers in the promos, they've changed the times of popular shows, you know, you've mentioned Stargate and Stargate Atlantis there, Channel 7 show them on at all kinds of weird times, the day and night, you can never know when it's going to be on.
It isn't necessarily in the program guide.
It's not in the program guide, it changes at the last minute. How are you supposed to watch it? You're bound to miss shows.
I know.
Where you got to go,
I know.
You're going to go and
the
download
reason,
them.
How are you supposed to watch it?
Via TiVo.
Exactly right. Exactly right. TV when you want,
I
and they'll move it all around, and there's probably method
and
madness
still
there.
And they still change the program guide at the last minute, and the TiVo will miss it.
This is
I
the
guarantee
the
that'll
Australian
happen.
Crippled TiVo.
The crippled Australian TiVo that doesn't work properly. Yep.
The moderator on our chat room tonight says too many ads.
Too many ads. That was exactly going to be my next point.
We
do not need more ads in Australia than they get in America. They cut the shows.
I'll turn him down a bit. Here he goes again.
They cut the shows. They cut scenes out of the shows to put more ads in than the Americans get. And the shows already run shorter here than they do in America because the standards conversion makes them shorter. Makes them run just ever so slightly faster. You lose them, you know, a couple of minutes out of a one-hour show. And then they cut another couple of minutes of scenes
here.
Out. They do, and they cut another couple of minutes of scenes out to fit more ads in. We don't need that in Australia. We don't need more ads than Americans.
Okay, good.
Don't we need the ads to pay for the content, though?
But why do we need more than they do in America?
Probably because Australian production costs are greater.
Because less and less, less and less people are watching television.
Less and less
why
people are watching
more
because they treat their viewers like scum. Look.
They're all downloading it instead.
Exactly right.
Oh, look, if you can watch something without commercial breaks in it, why wouldn't you?
Mm.
Hence the reason why people have been making points on the Tech Talk Radio chat tonight about the fact that our TiVo, when I say our, the Australian, more the point, the Channel 7 TiVo, doesn't skip ads.
No.
Whereas the American or the non-Australian version do. You've got to have a look at that. Also,
I'd happily pay for the TV shows that I download. In fact, 9 times out of 10, I'm going to end up going out and buying the DVDs eventually anyway. You know, but they just make it impossible to watch it off air. They show them 6 months later. You know.
Well, that's the other point, isn't it? Because it's been seen in a foreign country before it's seen here. The citizens of the other country, for want of a better terminology, have recorded and uploaded it for our convenience. So if you get onto any of these sites, it's quite easy to find the program that you want, click download, go to bed, come out the next morning, and then you've got the whole series.
Yep. Absolutely.
Now, I can give you a classic example. It's not limited to any one channel. As Graham said, he's given the five reasons. What about SBS? Did you mention
that? I did mention SBS. They were one of the... Yep.
Okay. No, I must admit... Anyway, you look at the Channel 7 issues with The Lost and the American sitcoms and Stargates and stuff like that. I think, obviously, there's a market for that.
Mm.
And when those series come out, the diehards, the wannabes, they'll jump on and download them because no commercial breaks in them. Unless they've recorded, someone's recorded off air in the States and put it up there with an ad in there, heaven help them.
No, which they don't. They cut the ads out before they upload them.
Absolutely, as you would. Well, I don't know. I don't watch these things. But anyway, you've got that major sort of issue there, making people want to go and download stuff. Secondly, it's really, really easy. It's not hard. In fact, in the newsletter that I sent out this morning, I got a grab from one of the guys doing the study, the Envisio study, saying it's now easier to download and play a program off the internet than it is to actually record it on a domestic VHS machine.
Yep.
And
let alone on one of these PVRs that they're trying to flog these days that don't work properly and got dodgy firmware and can't do what you want to do because they don't have a proper program guide.
That's for another story. But I think also the fact that the networks, and I use this right across the board, whether it be ABC, SBS, the whole of them, they delay things so long before what's gone to air overseas and what comes here that people...
Absolutely right.
People even stumble across them.
Yep.
Before they, on the net, before they actually, you know, because they've gone to check up on whatever they want to watch, and they're going, oh, look, it's already out already. Now, a classic example.
I mean, everybody on this panel has, we've got Lydia and we've got other people overseas in America who are going to see the programs before we do. We talk to regularly. I've got a good friend in the UK that I talk to very regularly online. And, Doctor Who, yep, 6 months later on Channel 2, it's too late. I've already heard all the details about it. Or I can't talk to my friend about a show that we both love for 6 months because I haven't seen it.
Yes, it's very frustrating. Doctor Who's a classic example. The Christmas the Christmas episode, which is traditionally a one-off standalone teaser for the next series, which runs to air in Christmas.
Which would traditionally be in December, I would have thought.
Well, yeah. I think, I haven't checked lately, but I think Christmas is around December 25 globally.
Globally.
Yeah, except in some probably, no, we won't even go there.
Some supermarkets have trouble knowing when Christmas is.
What do you mean? They've got decorations out all year round.
Yeah, well, they've put them out now.
The Christmas City cards are out already. Yeah, got them up already.
There's a big Christmas tree up already in the middle of the town.
A whole different story. Sorry, it's a brand for another day.
When did it go to air?
In Australia, it went to air at the beginning of the current series, which has just ended, which is 13 weeks. So it's probably about 15 weeks ago, which is middle of Christmas in July.
Yeah, who's responsible for that? What network?
The ABC. The government broadcaster. But that's the reason.
Government television.
That's the reason why people go and download these things.
Do you know how many episodes of Doctor Who I watched on the ABC this year?
None, if
not,
I know you.
Not a single one. Downloaded every one of them.
But you've got to look at the quality, too. If you're a bit of a, you know, quality finishiato, some of the stuff you get off downloads are fairly dodgy.
No, not these days. No.
Okay, good. It just goes to show I'm not doing it.
But no, the downloads you get these days, they're captured purely off the digital TV network, and they are absolutely top-notch. They look fantastic. They look
That's why we have watermarks these days, isn't
much
it?
Much better than your VHS. They look every bit as good as the DVDs. Now, even though I've downloaded this show and I've seen it, when the DVDs come out, you know, I'll be in line to buy those too.
Let's look at the cinemas.
I'm
What's
not
the turnaround?
To steal the content. I just want it now.
Understand
Sorry.
That.
Go on.
What's the turnaround in the cinemas? You look at a recent film that's been on. Let's talk about Indiana Jones and his glass skulls. That's probably the last movie that I saw in the cinemas. And that's just hitting the DVDs, I think, this weekend in the cinemas, like your local mainstream shops.
Mm-hmm.
So what's that been? It's probably been off the cinema for a month. So it's taking a month for it to turn around and come out onto DVD.
It's a lot better than they used to be.
Which is considerably a lot better than television. So, you know, by the chances are, you look at the global movie houses these days, and they are truly global. They've got to do that. Otherwise, they're going to lose a lot in revenue and sales and lost rentals because they've managed to sneak out and, you know, they've put the DVD out in America somewhere before it's come out in Australia. So might as well be a global release these days, shouldn't it?
Yep.
Anyway, we could go on about this, banging on about IP for ages. Go and have a look on the website if you're interested in it. The Australian Institute of Criminology, AIC.gov.au. It's on the front page there. Scroll down the left-hand side. You'll see it all about
IP. That's it. It's there. Yeah, down the front left. Intellectual property crime and enforcement in Australia.
Yes, them's the ones. All right, let me talk a little bit about Apple because...
Yes.
JD, I'm back in the studio, and we've had a bit of a...
Glad you're here tonight, JD. That's good.
Excellent.
Apple are doing pretty well for themselves.
Apparently, they've sold lots of iPods.
Yeah. And they're actually fairly cashed up at the moment, too, which is creating quite a bit of speculation in the industry. Even Steve Jobs came out the other day saying, don't know what's going to happen with this recession, depression, whatever recession-y thing we're going to have. But he wasn't sort of giving too much away. He said the company's pretty well, you know, we've got a good lineup, people are buying, and we're all cashed up. Now, the cashed up level is in the level of billions of dollars. They've got you know, plenty to spend in the back pocket. Obviously,
who can we buy tomorrow?
They haven't. Who can we buy tomorrow? Now, you look at how... I guess, take Adobe, for example. Adobe started off as a relatively small company, and they bought their competitors. They bought Aldus, which had Photoshop, so Adobe ended up with Photoshop. And other, without going into huge details, other companies along the way, you know, some sound recording.
Video recording.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Now, I think all the majors are fairly guilty of this over the course of time, but the speculation at the moment is that... Well, let's just face it, that Adobe is not traveling as well as they could be from a graphic animation point of view. You know, $2 billion, that's a lot of money. You could certainly, if you wanted to, you know, go shopping. There's some good fire sales around at the moment. If you look at the broadcast television side of things, we use Avid Media Composers and things like that. Avid laid off 300 people today globally. Now, they're a fairly sizable company when it comes to... They're up there in the top four of the broadcasting companies. You've got Avid, you've got Sony.
That wouldn't be a blip on the radar for Avid, though, would
absolutely.
It? 300 people is like, whatever.
Yeah, well, no, it's probably...
They'd be hiring and firing that many people every day.
They're fairly specialist people that work for this company because they only sell editing systems. They're not like an Apple where they've got, you know, domestic and professional and iPods and videos and all sorts of things and computers and stuff like that.
They'd employ tens of thousands of people, though, wouldn't they, around the world?
No, they're not that
no,
big.
Not that big.
But anyway, just to give you an example, they're in one of the top fours up there with Quantel and all those sort of guys.
Yep.
But yet they're laying off staff, which means that obviously times are tough. They're expecting for a bit of a slowdown. So anyway, cashed up company, Apple, maybe they're going to go shopping shortly. There's Avid, there's Adobe. Who knows what else they might have up their sleeve at the moment?
Well, they have a pretty cozy relationship with Adobe anyway because they use PDF pretty much exclusively through their operating system.
Hmm. Wonder if it's blackmail. We'll buy you. But hey, that's just purely speculation. But anyway, so Apple are doing well in the global thing. How's your iPhone going?
Very well.
Yeah? Mm. Has your haven't any bill shock? Although you don't pay your bill, do you?
No.
You're lucky.
So the answer is no. No bill shock.
No bill shock.
No bill.
I actually don't have data enabled on the next gen network on my SIM, which is kind of handy.
Yeah, you put dodgy settings in the data center.
Don't have to, actually. The SIM's disabled for data, the way it's set up,
okay.
Which is kind of handy.
It's another way to do it.
And so I just use the Wi-Fi connection when I'm close to, the studio here or home or whatever.
Yep.
And, of course, that's, more or less free.
How's it handling the day-to-day knocks, bumps, shocks, drops? Oh, I scratched my car keys on it. The general day, because you've had it for a month or three now, haven't you?
A few now. Touch wood, I haven't dropped it yet, so that's kind of good.
Yeah.
And I've got a half-decent case, and I was smart enough to get a screen protector early on.
Yeah.
I've got to say, compared to any other phone, it gets lots of fingerprint smudges and stuff, so if you're the person that buys it to make it look grilled and trendy, it won't stay that way. But I use mine on the field, and it does get dirty, so it's sort of standing up to that okay. Because I've got the black one, I haven't seen any of the cracks, but I'm sure they're there. But no, it's done everything I need it to do. It hasn't crashed on me yet, even though I've jailbroken it and put all sorts of interesting software on there. So it's all good so far.
Excellent. We should have a talk about that, because you haven't been in for... What day is it now?
A few weeks.
Yeah, no.
A
few weeks.
It's been like that.
You had your trip and then you were crook.
Well, I was crook. Then I had the trip while I was crook and it got crooker. Yeah.
Oh, goodness me. Adam Turner's come up and says, I never put my keys in the same pocket as my iPhone.
Good plan.
Yeah, no, it's excellent sort of stuff. We might take a break when we come back. We will hear from Adam Turner and his view from the couch this week, which is all to do with SMSs and be wary of getting new mobile broadband things.
And we'll SIM cards.
Talk about TIOs and stuff like that. So, time for coffee. We'll be back with more in a moment.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
If you listen to Tech Talk Radio live, you've probably wondered why you can't chat with the panellists in real time. Surely such technology exists. Well, now it does. chat.techtalkradio.com.au. By popular demand, you can now chat real time with panellists and other Tech Talk enthusiasts. All you need is a web browser, an internet connection, and a comfy chair. Monday nights at 8 p.m, go to chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You are indeed. Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Sitting across, the panel's grown since we started this evening, hasn't it, Dr. Ron?
Yeah, it has. It's doubled.
A couple of blow-ins this evening. Well, actually, no, they're not blow-ins. They're regular members here on the panel. Graham Kelly and JD have joined us in the studio this evening.
Our chat room's filled up as well.
Yeah, I know. You can tell when the scroll bar keeps on scrolling down. It's good.
If you'd like to chat to us live, you can come and join Al Pell and Andrew and Darren in the UK and Grant and Yep. Jeff for Kate. That's a strange name, isn't it?
Hello, Jeff.
Jeff, I, Kate.
Yeah.
Adam Turner's there. We're going to hear from Adam tonight.
We will, just in a moment, actually. Excellent. We'll have Excellent. A bit of a chat.
Very good. That's chat.techtalkradio.com.au. And if you're not listening to us live, that's okay as well. Go to forum.techtalkradio.com.au.
Yeah, and go and subscribe to our newsletter.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of interesting things in there, too.
Get some TikTok in your life.
Absolutely.
There's so many ways to communicate with TikTok Radio, aren't there?
Absolutely. Whether we respond or not is another thing. We're all very busy people, but nonetheless...
Somebody reads everything.
Absolutely, if nothing else. Yeah. So that's good. Dask is one of the users out there, obviously in country New South Wales. He says we're treated like it's 1960 out here with telecommunications.
Yes.
I feel for the, as I said, I feel for the country guys. I think they do get the rough end of the stick out there.
TPG and Sol said that everything's all right. They don't need.
Nah, don't need national broadband network. Nah. So
not a lot has changed since 1960, even in metropolitan areas. If you think about the telephone that's hanging up on your wall and the piece of copper wire that runs down the street and disappears.
Is that the bit we pay $40 a month for to be maintained?
That's the one. Not a lot has changed. In fact, nothing has changed.
I reckon the one in my house is still there.
Where's my $40 going then if I'm paying all this month?
14 megabits per second coming down that bit of copper now when I didn't have that in 1960.
Graham, the infrastructure is identical to what you had in 1960. It's where it actually goes into the network at the exchange point where everything starts to change, starts to get very different. The actual piece of copper that runs from the telephone exchange or the central office, as the Americans call it, to your house has not changed at all in 100 years, I'd go out on a limb and say.
Ooh. So why do I care if I can download Doctor Who nice and fast?
Because you could be downloading at 100 or 1,000 times faster if we had some investment in some current technology.
Oh, that's a good idea. Let's do that.
You happy with that?
Yeah.
All right.
100 times faster.
Vote one TikTok radio.
Yeah.
Stick with us. We'll go places.
Are we going to set up our own consortium, are we?
Well, we can't that's do any worse, can
that's
we?
A good idea.
There's no competition at the moment. They're falling like flies.
There's no competition because we're in the middle of a, what was it, Andrew? Is it a repression or
something?
Global.
Yeah. Yes. Mm. Deirdre. Do you know Deirdre? She runs this organisation called the TIO, the Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman.
Right.
Now, her organisation has recorded the biggest rise in complaints for the past 10 years. Must be over this copper that they haven't been maintaining.
These are not people complaining about the TIO. These are people complaining about their telecommunications providers. Yeah,
through the TIO. ISPs.
Yeah, because what happens is if you have an issue with your telco and it can't be resolved in a normal manner, that is without throwing things, getting really aggro, slamming phones down and all that sort of stuff, then you go to this mob called the TIO. Now, if you go to their webpage, they've got all their contact details, how to contact and how to lodge complaints and stuff like that.
Their webpage is tio.com.au.
Yes. Thank you to whoever sent the email from the TIO. Yes. Anyway, her office in the 2007-2008 financial year, Deirdre O'Donnell received almost 150,000 complaints from consumers and small businesses who couldn't resolve a problem with their landline, internet or mobile phone service provider. This compares with 102,463 complaints lodged by the TIO in the 2006-2007 financial year. Now, only 4 years ago, the TIO was handling about 60,000 complaints a year. And, mobile phone services, which is now outnumbering landlines in Australia, caused the most concern, with the TIO logging 47,300 complaints compared to 33,000. So that's up nearly, not quite, a quarter again.
Now, is that because we're expecting more of things, or is it because people are better educated and know when to complain?
I reckon it would be to do with plans and caps and things like that, because we've gone into this stupid cap scenario environment these days where telecommunications company likes to hide the real cost of phone calls in this thing called a cap, where, you know, it's such a false economy. You look at any of them, you spend $49 and you get $300, $400 worth of included calls. What $300 or $400 worth of included calls? It's just so misleading. Why doesn't someone bring out a plan that says, oh, you pay 2 cents a minute? No cap, just use your phone. 2 cents a minute or whatever. I don't know. Mm. I just find it, why do we have to hide behind these caps? And I reckon that's predominantly where the complaints are going to be coming from.
That's probably part of it. And another part of it is going to be to do with internet services. I reckon there's going to be a lot more complaints to do with people's ISPs and so on.
Yeah, well, Dodo, they're in trouble with ACMA at the moment. Did you hear about that?
I did hear about it. Yeah. I heard that in the news.
For those, yeah, good. I'm glad. Where were you then? In the other side of town. Dodo have been using
call down the freeway somewhere.
Yes, Dodo have been using call centres in India to harass Australians who have signed up for the Do Not Call Register.
Haven't been checking the Do Not Call Register like they should have.
No, exactly right. So, naughty dodo. Another 13,899 complaints were received about mobile premium services.
Oh, yeah.
SMSing, you know, to...
Yeah, in a moment of weakness at 2 a.m. when you're watching one of those ads on the TV and you think...
Is that what you call that?
I think you should stop right there.
You think, yeah, I'll get my star sign from that 1-900.
I don't have a bread knife that cuts through shoes.
That's what I need.
And then a tomato immediately after.
Yes. It's what everybody needs.
Let me where's my mobile phone? I need to send a text message really fast.
Absolutely. But mobile premium services... Once you've got to read the fine print on these things, and admittedly, you've got to thank television for this because they're forced to put all the terms and conditions on there that are really relevant. And
yeah, in a font too small to read, then
You should be able to read it.
Far too quick. You need to press the pause button on your TiVo if it works.
If you've got a problem with small fonts, not being able to read it, give Ruth a call at CAD, Commercials Advice, at Free TV Australia, because that's who I deal with on a regular basis when I submit my commercials for approval.
Okay.
And she's very... good when it comes to, no, can't read that long enough, can't read that big enough, whatever
and
it is like that.
How many meters across is the plasma screen in your office where you watch the commercials you make?
No, it's nothing to do, it's pixels based, my friend. And it's not just subliminal either.
Just checking.
Oh, not again. I just say that for.
All right, let's get back on track. Let's talk about SMS premium services. You sign up to these things, you know, and you end up subscribing to a service where you have to text out or finish or stop or something to it.
Yep.
But in the meantime, they charge you $5, $10, $20 a month for sending.
A month
per message.
How many messages can we send them before he sends the stop command?
Yeah. Absolutely. But wait, there's more. Have you heard about number recycling when it comes to mobile broadband cards these days?
No.
Well, what happens if you go into a shop and you say, I'd like one of your dongly modem things on a data pack, they give you a dongly data thing and they give you a SIM card, which has got a phone number assigned to it. Normally it's someone's old mobile number that they've cancelled.
It's a strange number that no one cares what it actually is because no one's
going to
be using
it. Chances are, because it's recycled, someone's had it before.
Right.
Now, what happens if there's been a premium SMS service associated with that number? Who tells the SMS company that Billy Bloggs no longer has this data card? Because they charge the carrier. They don't charge... They don't send you a bill direct, if I'm not mistaken.
So the...
Because it comes on your phone bill.
Yeah, so the carrier should be notifying them that the account holder has changed.
That's right. Now, Adam Turner, the...
Only Adam could have this happen to him.
Poor Adam.
Adam Turner recently invested in a data card for his laptop, his notebook, his netbook, whatever it is that he's got. And that's the subject of this week's View from the Couch, all to do with premium SMSing, which he denies emphatically.
Always double-check your phone bills. Number recycling means that you can be charged for services you never subscribed to. Last month, I signed up for a mobile broadband account with Three. I just got the first bill, which should only be for $20, but instead it was for $90. I was sure I hadn't exceeded my 1 gig download cap. Scrolling through the bill revealed $70 worth of premium SMS charges for services I never signed up for. Every wireless broadband modem that connects to a mobile phone network contains a SIM card. This SIM card is allocated a mobile phone number, even if you never use it to make phone calls. The phone number might have previously belonged to someone else, so you need to keep an eye on your bill to make sure you're not accidentally charged for phone-related services. It seems the doofus who previously had my number was dumb enough to subscribe to premium SMS services. They were charging this poor sucker $5 every time they sent him a text and win trivia SMS and some other rubbish. Unless he checked his bill carefully, he may not have even known he was paying for this rubbish. A quick Google search uncovered a recent discussion at Whirlpool with the subject, "Where did my money go?" It seems other people have had the same problem, although they've had different experiences when it comes to getting the issue resolved. First, I rang Three. The guy in the call center was adamant that there was nothing Three could do about it. I got a little bit nasty at one point, and then I realized that this guy was just sticking to his script and we weren't going anywhere. All he would say was that I needed to ring the premium SMS services and get them to unsubscribe me and refund my money. Studying my bill closely, I realised I was receiving messages from two different services. One was labelled net size, content subscription, and the other was labelled dialect, text and win trivia. When I rang net size and explained the situation, they checked their records and quickly acknowledged that my number was subscribed to the service last year, well before I signed up with Three. If I fax them a copy of my contract with Three, they say they'll send me a refund check. Dialect wasn't quite as helpful to begin with, admitting the subscription began last year but saying they'd look into it and notify me if I was eligible for a refund. The poor call centre operator had trouble getting her head around the fact that the number is now allocated to a USB modem and not a mobile phone. Now, it only actually took Dialect a few hours to get back to me via email, said, yes, we've checked it out, you're right, and now they're sending me a check. So I've actually been impressed with both premium SMS services that they resolved the problem quite quickly and didn't try and blame me and get out of it. Now, if my money doesn't show up from either of these, the next call will be back to Three, and if I don't get any satisfaction there, I'll be calling the telecommunications industry ombudsman. There are two lessons to be learned here. Firstly, if you're dumb enough to subscribe to premium SMS services, they'll bleed you dry. Secondly, always double-check your bills.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Check your bills. Always check your bills.
Oh, yes, always. Always check your fader too. Yes, it comes to that. And as Adam says, you got to go via the... try and resolve the issue via your provider first before you go giving Deirdre a ring at the TIO, because it's a bit of a mandatory, I believe, isn't it? So
I think they will ask you first.
What have you done?
What have you done? What steps have you taken with the organisation you have a contract with to resolve this?
APAL on the chat saying, should always ask for a new number. What's to say that they fib to you and lie to you and say, yeah, it's a new number? Because it's one of those bizarre, you know, 0467 1293, you know. You think,
you can't quarantine used numbers forever, though.
No, you can't. Otherwise, but you should be able to quarantine. You should be able to quarantine them, because Telstra do. Telstra quarantine a landline number for 12 months before you can
That's not forever, though.
No, no, no. But it's enough for an SMS company to say, oh, they're not paying their bills, or they can't. You know what I mean?
But why?
Obviously not with mobiles. Obviously, no, there's not enough to go around.
Where's the SMS company's incentive to stop sending the messages? They'll just keep sending it until the number gets reallocated, because then they, you know, there's a fair chance that they'll get paid anyway.
I would have thought that if you're you're billing Three or whoever.
If you're charging five...
If Three are going to pay it, well, then whose problem's that? Because they're paying on your behalf.
Yeah. If you're an SMS, one of these SMS companies, and you're charging people $5 a message to send them trivia or their, you know, star predictions or whatever it might happen to be, then you're not particularly worried about who you're ripping off. You're just going to keep sending the messages, and if you get paid, that's really good.
Even if you just got one message a day, one premium message, and it cost you $5 to receive it, it's $150 over a month on top of everything else.
That's right.
That's a lot of money, isn't it?
Oh, it's a lot of money. Yeah. It really is.
Someone I was just reading there in the chat was someone entered a competition, $10 a week or something, they were being charged to receive SMSs or something like that.
That's up fast. That's
absolutely
up fast.
Now, can I tell you another personal experience during the week about always checking your phone bill?
Please do.
Telstra have my business in certain areas, one of which is a fixed line service. And you get the notification in the email saying, oh, your online bill's ready for payment now, we're ready to extort you, whatever it is like that. Anyway, I went and clicked and double-checked, and I thought, that's an excessively high amount for the telephone service which I am expecting to receive a bill for. Now, the reason that I could tell that it was an excessively high amount is because I don't make outgoing calls on it. I use a different service.
Yep.
So I thought, wow, goodness me, Telstra, why would this be? So I spent... Have you ever used their online billing system when you log into Telstra to check your bill?
No, I tried once upon a time. It's so much trouble and it'll lost do so your, much hair.
It'll
that
do
I
your head up. In. It's one of those amazing systems where...
Something that should be so simple, it's so incredibly complicated.
It's a bit like calling them.
They gave me an electronic certificate about 18 years ago.
Yes, I had one of those.
Yeah, because I have that, I can't use it without it. And I don't know where that certificate is. It's on a floppy disk somewhere in a house that I don't live in anymore.
I've only ever had a username and a password.
Well, there you
see,
go.
I'm lucky,
you're,
I guess.
You are lucky.
But anyway.
Was that our test house?
Yeah.
not a production one. We had a development house, didn't we, for a while?
That's right.
Sorry, you go.
It's probably back there on a hard drive that you've cast out into the nature strip at some point in time.
It's never to be seen again. Floppy disk down the back of the couch.
I can guarantee the floppy disks after this particular point in time don't work. They never used to last more than about 3 months, did they?
Some of them never last more than 3 minutes.
Absolutely. Anyway, where were we? Oh, yes, Telstra.
Yes.
We were talking about...
That's right.
If you've tried communicating through to some of these telemarketing, well, the what do you call them? The telemarketers, whether it be Telstra or any other company, quite often you can be, you know, doing the rounds of the IVR for some time before you get through to them. Well, the Telstra online billing system is similar to that, especially if you have multiple accounts, because it gives you this drop down and it puts all, not phone numbers, but account numbers. Now, do you know your account number with Telstra? No, I don't.
No.
Anyway, it's a few there, and I'm going, where's this money coming from? So I've sort of clicked through the three accounts that I have with them, and I finally found it. And what they've done is they're double dipped on the line rental.
Right.
So, you know.
How did that happen?
Well, that's a very good question. And I just thought, well, there's only one person that can answer that, and that'll be someone at Telstra. So I rang them up, and I spent, it must have been about 10 minutes listening to I Am We Are, you know, that bit where you get to after you've put in the phone number. Anyway, I finally got to this. Let's just say consultant, operator, whatever you'd like to call her. Now, she was very much on the aggressive, because I'd gone to billing, not sales, billing. She was very much on the aggressive, you know, front foot to start with, as to say, what do you want? We're not wrong. Hello, how can I help you? And I said, hang on a minute, my friend. I've got a problem with my billing. And I said, she said, what's the problem? I said, you've double-dipped line rental. You've given me two, you know, you've charged me for 6 months of line rental, same dates. No, we don't do that. I've been here for 10 years. I've never done that before.
I would have said at that point, okay, what's your name? Just scribble that down on a piece of paper here. And when the problem's not fixed within the amount of time that you're supposed to have it fixed by.
Yeah, well, yeah. I gave her the benefit of the doubt and I humoured her, because you have to do that with some of these call takers. I said, no, hang on a sec. Here's my account detail. After I'd given them my DNA swab, mother's maiden name, all that sort of stuff, proved that I was really who I said I was.
100 points of ID, yeah. Even though you're an existing account holder. Yeah,
that's right. As soon as I'd done that, I got through to them. And she basically came along and said, oh, you're right.
How did that happen?
And then the tone of voice changed. It's a bit like, you know, playing a grand final and the wind changes direction. It's like, oh, I'm really sorry. I've never seen that in 10 years of time. Now, anyway, to her credit, she fixed it up pretty well straight ahead. And she said, I'm going to have to log this. And do you want to talk to anyone? I said, no, I don't want to talk to anyone. I said, I just want to take it off because I'm about to pay my bill. Because I like charging you $5 if you're 3 seconds late on paying your Telstra bill these days.
Then you do the whole issue me with a new bill and I'll pay that one dance. That's a lot of fun.
No, I didn't do that because it's issued electronically. And she issued it straight away and it changed. I hit refresh on my browser
really?
And it changed straight away.
That's impressive.
That is impressive.
It is impressive. Yeah, they got the technology right, but providing they built correctly in the first place, it works really, really well. Now, having said that, she put me on hold for a moment and I got some more propaganda music down my ears. And at that point in time, I chose to have a bit of a chin wag to the person sitting next to me in the office saying, I was like, oh, I'm just on the phone to Telstra. Rah, 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 rah. Anyway, she said, oh, and I was talking to my colleague next to me, and I said, she said, as in the woman on the phone, she'd never seen a problem like this in 10 years. And she's come back and said, yeah, you're right. I've never seen a problem. Yeah. And I thought, oh, my God, they listen to you while you're
they
on
listen
hold.
To you while you're getting the I Am We Are music.
That's right.
They're listening to what you're saying.
They can hear what's going on.
I must remember that.
That's good information.
I'm
going
to have fun with that.
Now, let me tell you another story, because the colleague that I had in the beginning, she also had an issue recently with the phone company. But instead of doing what I did, which was just talking, you know, oh, I'm on the phone to Telstra, and she was going, like, probably what a lot of people do, and just putting the boots in.
Yeah.
And she said, I rang them 5 times and they kept hanging up on me.
Yep.
I said, I think I know why. Next time you hear the music, just you know, hum along. Don't say anything. So anyway, there you go. That was my Telstra experience.
So you're getting Telstra online billing? You're not getting a written bill anymore?
No. They send me all... I now get more... And I use the word junk mail. If you get a bill, that's a bill. But anything that's not a bill, I'd term as junk mail when it comes to what phone companies send you. And since I've gone away from the paper bill, I now get more junk mail from the phone company than I've ever had in my life about deals and offers and spammy things and all that sort of stuff via snail mail.
We're still a paper bill family, and we recently, and I think you might have already talked about this, but we've recently been advised by Telstra they're going to slimline our printed bill so that we actually don't know what we're paying for.
Oh, that's handy.
I wonder if I'm waiting to see what it looks like, but
it'll be a sheet of paper. You owe us $23. Here, pay now, or we'll charge you an extra bit more.
Well, it's in their interests on a number of fronts.
Well, Three did the billing thing, didn't they? They said,
They said
we're going to, if you want to continue to keep your paper bill, we're going to charge you an extra $2 a bill or something.
rather than go the other way and give you a discount on your...
I don't have a particular problem with that.
No, I don't. I don't have a problem with that. I just have a problem with the fact that why wouldn't you give a discount for a paper for an electronic bill rather than to charge you for a paper bill?
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Adam Turner in the chat room says, I once had a number that previously belonged to a pizza shop. Now, I've got a friend who also was in that situation when they moved house many years ago.
Wasn't a pizza shop?
Well, no, they weren't running a pizza shop, but as soon as I got the new telephone put on, the phone started ringing almost straight away. Hello, is that such and such's pizza? No, you've got the wrong number. Okay, sorry. They'd hang up, and then within 5 seconds of them hanging up, ring, 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 ring. Is that such and such's pizza? No, sorry. After this happened about 500 times in the first week, they just started taking orders because it was easier. Yes, what would you like? Oh, could I get a medium pepperoni something or other and a small chicken Hawaiian and some garlic bread? No worries, it'll be 15 minutes. Okay, thanks, bye.
And it'll be $5 when you come, yes.
Oh, that's cheap and that's quick. Okay, thanks, bye. Bye.
So then they'd rock up at the alleged pizza shop, say, where's my pizza, and there'd be nothing there.
Well, we don't know.
Now, did they ever find out what the problem was? Because we had a similar thing at work where my workplace kept on getting phone calls for an organic lettuce producer.
Organic lettuce producer. Let me think about this. Organic, right?
And I wasn't working in groceries at the time.
Right.
Organic lettuce producer.
Yes. And it ended up being a Yellow Pages number fault. That wasn't corrected for a year.
I think my...
Well, it's hard to correct something in a printed directory, isn't
it? That's right.
Yeah. You can't issue an online update.
I think with my anecdote, they just changed their number in the end. They got completely sick of it.
Mm. Telstra will do that for you free of charge the first time. They'll ping you a second time.
Sorry if you ever lived in the Doncaster area and you ordered pizza one night. That story probably explains it. Yes, it happens a lot, though. Happens a lot. And someone else was asking on the chat room...
Come to our chat room if you'd like to ask questions.
Is there any such thing as a number that's never been used before? A new number? And the answer's probably, they'd be few and far between.
Yeah,
you'd
probably
days.
Get them in the 8 series.
Yeah. They've started 8, well, in our area code 03, they've started 8s.
Yeah. And the voice over IP companies tend to give out numbers like they're no tomorrow. You know,
well, I'm reasonably comfortable that my mobile number's original because I remember subscribing on the old big brick phone.
Mine, I'm fairly comfortable with mine.
Absolutely, yeah. Likewise. It's a bit of a lay down Mazera if you've kept it. Remember the old numbering system? It used to have it used to be 048 instead
018,
of 018. That's right. Mm-hmm. 018, sorry, wrong digit.
And 019s and 017s. Yeah.
And then they added the things. 4 when they went to the 10 digit.
Mm. They changed the numbering plan. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a long time ago, isn't it? But let's another bouquet for Telstra. Because we like to balance our program here. Allegedly, some people don't think so, but we try to. Telstra has revamped its Big Pond wireless broadband plans for the second time in 2 months, increasing the limits of its 3 gigabyte plan and dropping its contentious excess usage charge on high-end plans.
Big deal.
Okay, noted. The telco has increased the limit of its 3 gig $89.95 per month to 5 gigs, so nearly double the amount for the same amount of money, and will also shape the speed of its connection to 64 kilobits per second if the users reach the monthly limit, which is normally the cash cow for ISPs, isn't it? Keep going, buddy, at $2 a meg or kilobyte or whatever they charge you at. But no, they're actually going to cap their bandwidth usage, which I think is
pretty good. Only on the really expensive plans that no one can afford anyway.
I still get my 10 megabits a month, megabytes per month from 3 for $5. So I think that's pretty good still.
Really? Okay.
Really?
Yeah. You reckon that's good?
Yeah, isn't it?
What do you do with it?
Not much.
Exactly. Why? Because it's only 10 megabytes.
Yeah, 10 megabytes for $5. It's pretty good value for money, you would have thought. Yeah.
Okay. Speed shaping will also apply to the 10 gig plan, which still costs $130 a month. Both the 5 gig and 10 gig plans are called Big Pond Liberty. However, users of the 1 gig limit, $60 plan, will be still subject to usage fees at 25 cents a meg, which is one email can cost you a dollar, especially if it's one of the emails that tends to do the rounds of my mailboxes with a graphic or a silly movie.
Even all the way up to the plan that costs $60 a month, they only give you 1 gigabyte and they charge you excess usage.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get a shaped plan, a plan that doesn't have excess usage charges until you pay $90 a month and then you only get 5 gigabytes.
Good question.
Hmm.
Yeah. Jeff Case just said, how can two bouquets for Telstra on one
program
be balanced?
Yeah, I was reading that. It hasn't turned out to be two bouquets at all. It's just, no.
You gave one before.
Yeah, that's one.
Yeah, and that was the other one there. Well, it's not sort of really
that one sort of went downhill. Yeah, no, I've
okay, we retract
that story.
Let's call that just reporting the facts then. We won't call that a bokeh, but anyway.
Sorry, Telstra. You'll have to do better.
Okay, we're going
to
have a break because we haven't had many tonight. And look at the time. Oh, my goodness. Hey, did you know we've only got six shows to go before Christmas? Oh, I'm looking forward to it. Jingle, jingle, 1st of December.
Really? What are we going to do over Christmas?
Have a holiday. What are you going to do?
Are you working?
Yeah. You
I'll be in here.
We'll take a break. We'll be back with... Oh, really? Oh, good. The listeners will love to hear that. We'll take a break, back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Compelling.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Judicious.
The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time.
Historical.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history. This is the day, the 6th of October, 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever.
Caring.
I know as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school. How can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
You heard of road rage? What about web rage?
They should be wearing a mask and carrying a gun.
Relations between Telstra and the federal government have been extremely strained almost from the moment Sol Trujillo became chief executive.
Optus had, again, had quite a good quarter, but its 3G service is very low profile at the moment.
And the Queen's got an iPod.
Betty's got one.
Yeah.
I wonder what she listens to. She'll probably listen to us.
An unexpectedly high number of voters swamped the system. Well, what did they expect?
Controversial.
Less attention is paid to the equally interesting question, should journalists blog?
Magical.
And I've got some residual powers.
Ambitious.
High-speed broadband, it's available in most of Asia as well as being in the rest of the world. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
Religion.
Talking for the Roman Catholics, I have been on Vatican Radio.
Comedy.
You put the date on ePray, and you get a whole service. Just on.
How does it go?
It goes.
Insightful, entertaining, and informative. Tech Talk Radio. More than just technology.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Oh, we're back. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan. JD is in this evening. Right over there.
What are you throwing around the studio,
sorry,
Dr. Ron?
Sorry. Absolute plethora of laptops, headphones, PDAs, all sorts of
mini disc recorders, mobile telephones, the list goes on.
Absolutely. That's what doing a tech program is all about.
Out of control.
Come and join us on our chat, chat.techtalkradio.com.au, where you'll find a full contingency of listeners there this evening, even as far away as Darren in the UK. It's really easy because you can tell because he uses a good icon when he logs in, Darren UK.
Hi, Darren.
He's what time would it be over there? It's probably he's having lunch listening to us.
Yeah, about 12:30.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, well, you've just been there recently, haven't you?
Hmm.
How's the Aussie dollar now? Aren't you glad you're not over there now?
I am. I'm glad we came home when we did. Starting to look like it was back in 2001.
I even believe the RBA stepped in today to try and stop the spiralling Aussie dollar heading south. But we're not a financial show. We shouldn't be talking about these sort of things.
Yeah,
it's technology. Technology. It is going to be interesting, though. Let's talk a little bit about financial sides of things when it comes to tech. The Aussie dollar has plummeted, which means our imports are going to be more expensive, which means the gadgets and toys that we want to buy for Christmas are probably going to be twice the price that we were envisaging they would be.
Nonsense.
Really? Why do you say that?
Prices always go down for tech gadgets, bits and pieces.
Well, even with the dollar halving its value?
But it only doubled its value not long ago.
It's taken a while. Put it this way, if you want to buy anything out of the States at the moment, it's going to cost you considerably more than what it would have recently.
Buy what everybody else buys. They'll make it in China for half the price, so everyone wins.
Okay, well, I'm glad to hear you're skeptical about it. There's a lot of other people out there that don't share your opinion in those sort of things. Jerry Harvey came out the other day from Harvey. What's the shop he has?
Harvey Norman.
That's him,
yeah,
Jerry Harvey.
Hardly normal, yeah.
He's going to publish his takings, his books, on his website so that people can see how the effect of the global cash crisis, credit crisis, is going to affect his business. Because he's traditionally selling goods and services, which are for those who have a bit of extra cash. They're not what you call the necessities of life.
No.
So... And a lot of those things
it'll
are
be very interesting.
People will be sitting on their hands when it comes to those sort of things. I wouldn't want to be a car manufacturer at the moment either, just quietly.
Oh, no. Definitely wouldn't want to be in that industry. But didn't we have a story on last week's show saying that the financial crisis wasn't going to affect the IT and
we tech did.
Gadgetry sort of world?
We did. I think they were wrong.
You think?
Seeing's believing. I haven't seen any prices skyrocket yet, but I suspect as new models are imported and come out of certain devices that there might be an associated price hike with them and stuff like that.
I think perhaps they'll just not drop as quickly as they normally do. Pricing in this industry is just constantly getting.
I hope so.
No, I disagree, Graham. Disagree, yeah.
All right.
Depends on what you're buying,
how
much you're paying for it, where you're buying it from.
If you're buying the same thing as everybody else...
Yeah. Can I be as brazen to say I think one of the key indicators will be the price of an Apple computer?
And in fact, there's a bit of an outcry because of the update to the MacBooks and the MacBook Pros that have now got glossy screens and so forth, and Adam may well have spoken about that because I dare say he wants one. Their list price is actually quite high because of the Aussie dollar.
Oh, there you go, Graham.
Oh, okay.
And people are very unhappy. They like the idea of the machine, but it's just too expensive.
Mm.
Well, there you go. I rest my case. I think we are going to see a bit of this sort of happen. Maybe
a short term thing.
I hope so. The reason why I chose Mac is because they are a consumable item of more the must, you know, more so than a PC.
Yeah,
if you want to buy a computer, you could either go to the PC or you could go to the next level and get a Mac.
But that's exactly the point, though. Mac is not the base cheap PC. It's the next level. You pay a bit more, you get something a bit nicer.
Well, sadly, in the US, the idea was it would be the base model computer, but...
that's exactly right.
it didn't work for us over here.
No. Oh, well.
Let's talk a little bit about Microsoft, because, once again, balance is everything. Microsoft this week launched a huge anti-piracy effort, which also was a catalyst in me talking about what we spoke about this evening on the phone. I had a chat...
I saw something about this floating around the blogosphere with some upset Chinese users.
Yeah, well, in a lot of respects, they've taken simultaneous legal action in over 48 countries to try and stamp out piracy.
Right.
48?
48 countries. The company is pursuing cases in the federal court against individuals for copyright infringement as part of a global crackdown. Now, I was having a chat to Kerry from Howarth, who's the rep here in Australia who likes foisting Microsoft upon us when we have a chat to things. Now, she was saying on the phone that... the biggest problem at the moment in respect to Microsoft piracy is the eBay traders and the people selling things online. The boxes, that, you know, not only, you're probably thinking of piracy, you go down to the local market and someone gives you a disc which has got a handwritten Microsoft this, Microsoft that on it, on the box. She was saying that the current piracy regime gives a glossy box, comes in a cardboard box, like you would go down to one of the reputable dealers and buy your software.
Yep.
Yeah.
It has a holographic certificate on it, has all the books and all the paperwork.
Yep.
And as a layperson, you would not be able to tell the difference. You would think you were buying the genuine artifact.
That's a big problem.
Mm.
And so this is, I think, the people that they're targeting at the moment, which is a huge problem, because if you do go down there in good faith to buy a product... and you think, I'll buy it on eBay because I get it for a few shekels cheaper. Well, you're going to be sadly disappointed.
Now, in the past, Microsoft have had an interesting policy about this. If you buy something like that, that is the sort of a fake that you might easily fall for, and you get tripped up by their anti-piracy techniques, you can actually go through the system in Microsoft, and if you provide the information about where you got the software... what you paid for it, who you bought it from, and help them to track down where it came from, they will help you in getting your copy of Windows or whatever it might happen to be turned into a legitimate one.
You've had customers before, Graham, getting stroppy at you because you charge them hundreds of dollars for Microsoft products, and they say, but we've got an email here, it says I can buy it for $1.
I have had that happen, yes.
Genuine Microsoft Office XP and...
genuine snake oil.
Yeah
that's exactly right.
Only $1. Buy it now.
So, if you're prepared to dob in the person who sold you the fake, then Microsoft might be more likely to help you out with getting your software up and running properly.
Well, it's good to hear. You scratch my back, I'll scratch your back type sort of thing.
That's the idea, because Microsoft aren't really concerned about the individual. They want to stamp out the people that are producing this stuff.
Mm.
But
which is predominantly in countries which are in Asia, I'd be guessing. They seem to have the least respect for intellectual property.
Yeah, that's
and I don't mean just in software. I'd say in everything.
In a lot of fields, but I think it happens in a lot of places.
They buy a lot of our commodities too. I believe it's probably another reason why the dollar's going south at the moment. Yes, anyway, well, good luck with that, Microsoft. We might try and get someone on the show to have a chat about that.
You can't really get away with running non-genuine Microsoft operating system. You can't run a non-genuine Windows anymore.
Well, there's a promo going around on our radio program about Dr. Ron installing genuine software on it and having he had to reload his operating system.
And if you don't get the latest updates, so you're not protected against the spyware, you become part of the spam problem, like I was saying last week. Your PC will get taken over by and get used to send out spam or to host, you know, unpleasant websites or something like that.
The operating system will trigger pop-ups all the time and you won't be able to log on. You get big warnings and you need to resolve this now, and it makes the system very, very cumbersome to
use. I've only ever seen one system that's done that and you've followed...
No.
A colleague that I work with who will remain nameless. But nonetheless, yes, you click the links to take you through to the appropriate place where you can update. And it was... they didn't give the opportunity, like what Graham was talking about there, to dob in a pirate, or if it was, in fact, a pirated copy. It, yeah. No, it wasn't there. But what they did offer was saying, yes, if you'd like to click here and give us your credit card details for $254 or something, you can...
Yeah, a get genuine kit, yeah.
Yeah, we'll send you through the appropriate stuff.
Yep.
I was like, well, that's fair enough from Microsoft's point of view, but you know, there wasn't that level of sort of service that you were just describing before, Graham.
But that's better than what they used to do. At least they do give you a way to turn your non-genuine one into a genuine one, which, you know, once upon a time they would not have done.
No, it was very cumbersome in the past. You had to have stuff mailed out to you, and you had to manually enter keys.
And you had to, at one point you couldn't change the key on your machine. You had to reinstall.
It's a reinstall. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Let's talk about Optus. Optus had a bit of a glitch in their mobile broadband, mobile everything actually, during the week.
Again?
Last week, between 9:30 in the morning and 12:30 in the afternoon, Optus customers in Adelaide and surrounding areas experienced a disruption to their third generation voice services. And apparently the same thing happened in Sydney as well. As a result of the outage, customers had to reroute their mobile services to the carrier's slower GSM network. So they had fallback issues. So it probably wouldn't have affected you voice-wise, but you probably would have noticed it if you were using Skype or any of the third generation.
Or making video calls or doing any of that sort of stuff.
I know who makes a video call.
Well, I don't know. I don't.
Somebody Dr. Ron and I have done it once, I think, on a free day or something, where the telephone company say, no one's using this feature, let's give it to them for free to try and get them in hooked and stuff. And
you can use it to tell whether your fridge light goes off or not.
I hadn't thought of that.
No, the man sitting next to you has.
Yeah, we did.
It's a previous Tech Talk radio program.
We did an on-air experiment.
Oh, that goes back into the distant past of Tech Talk radio, doesn't it?
We did, absolutely. I would use video calling if it was included in my cap, but the problem is it's so expensive. It's prohibitively expensive.
You want to charge 75 cents in 30 seconds or something.
Well, whatever it is, it's too expensive if it's above and beyond your cap.
They run a promo every now and then where you get free video calls for a week.
Yeah, like on Father's Day, for example, you can video call a nominated number or as long as it's another
but if you think
number
about
on the
it,
same network, and that's
and
free.
And do you use it when that happens?
Oh, occasionally, and I say, oh, yeah, it still works, that's pretty good, but that's it. It's just a novelty. And I would use it every day, and I'd use it a lot more than I do now if they had realistic pricing, which they don't at the moment. It's above and beyond what your cap is. If I'm paying a $99 cap now and I make a dozen video calls a month, my $99 bill turns into a $129 bill. Ridiculous.
Yeah, it is a concern, isn't it? When you think about the fact that it's just data going over a network and they just choose... It's like speaking a different language. If you choose to speak French on your mobile phone today, we're going to charge you 70 cents a call. If you're going to speak Swahili, well, that's $3.50 for 30 seconds, but if it's English, it's just 25 cents. It's not fair, is it? Whether it be video, data, or anything else.
It's silly. It's very silly.
It's very silly just because you hit the video button. I must admit, I've actually inadvertently got... Have you ever received a phone call from a colleague where they've actually dialed the wrong number and they've hit the video call? It's quite disconcerting looking at someone on a phone when you least expect it. It's like, what are you doing ringing me video-wise?
It entirely on the circumstances.
Like, normally when you do video call tests, people just tee it up. Like, oh, look, it's free day today. I'll give you a video call. Yeah, good. Okay, thanks. But sometimes out of the blue, someone's pushed the wrong button on their phone and you're looking at them. It's like, well, don't do that to me. It's embarrassing.
But if they've done it by mistake, you're probably looking straight down their ear hole or something, eh?
Yeah, or them fossicking around with a phone on the front seat of their car while they're driving along or something like that. You can see the roof of their car. And, oops, sorry.
Could be worse.
Held
could
the
be
phone
worse.
Up to your ear thinking it was a voice call and the camera would be pointing straight into their head.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Oh,
yeah.
No, that's all wrong. You need the flash turned on.
Hmm.
I can understand them I can understand them charging more for video calls if the video call itself uses more bandwidth than a conventional voice call or uses more channels. That's okay. Charge at a higher rate, but include it in the cap. Don't whack it on top of what you're already paying. That's absolutely silly.
It is.
SMSs are included in your cap. MMSs are included in your cap. Voice calls are included in your cap.
The other thing you've got to watch with mobile phone companies too is offer you these new caps, and instead of having a $300 limit, you get a $400 limit for the same price. But read the fine print. They jack the per 30-second price up. So they're winning. Don't believe a word of it. They win on those sort of things. They go, let's make it look good.
So they send you an email, send you something in the mail that says, for your convenience and just to make your experience that much better, you immediately have to translate to meaning, so that we make more money out of you.
Okay, Mozilla. They make the web browser Firefox, amongst other things.
They don't make any money out of us.
That's true. Mm. Executives at Mozilla Foundation have decided not to bother with making Firefox Mobile work on Google's Android. Instead, the cunning plan is to
call that Google.
Instead, the cunning plan is to produce a Linux native edition of Firebadge Mobile for the Nokia Internet Tablet. Yes, it's interesting the way that people choose their models, isn't it?
Mm.
Obviously, someone's upset someone along the line with Google and Mozilla, and they're not talking. But anyway, Mozilla's director of mobile engineering, Christine Sergison, said that he was spurning Android, and that there were no plans to port Firefox Mobile to it now or in the future. Symbian, on the other hand, will be next up after Windows Mobile version are up and running. So there you go, they're going to take it to Symbian. Another interesting thing too, we've got a lot of Linux and Ubuntu users in the room. In fact, they're probably double half the population in the studio at the moment. Linux code, have a guess how much Linux code's worth. If you were going to sell it on the market as a open source,
as a proprietary system.
Yeah, you're going to sell. It's like Windows saying, here, Dr. Ron, I'm going to sell you the Windows source code. How much?
Here's the source code for Windows XP. Knock yourself out.
That's it. How much would you pay for Linux? Linux's code?
It'd be worth a lot of money.
It is. Considerably a lot of money. Because a damn sight more developers go into Linux than what some of the proprietary software. Anyway, recent reports have it worth around $10.8 billion.
Yeah, believe that.
Yep. The most recent version of Fedora would have cost a conventional software company $10.8 billion to develop. And this is from Linux, so take it with a grain of salt. The group estimated that a team of professional developers working for a single company would require $10 billion worth of work to develop the software.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's the way you would assess it.
Now, you guys,
the man hours that would go into the programming.
Look at the man hours that go into a system such as Microsoft. How does it compare? Is it good value for money?
Well, with you mentioned Fedora as a distribution, the new versions come out around about twice a year. Whereas, you know, we had Vista come out how long ago now, and it still doesn't work properly.
And one you pay for, and one you don't.
And the operating system before that from the proprietary company came out in 19, whenever it was.
Vista Service Pack 2 comes out very shortly. Yeah. That's released, I think, next week for testing.
Mm.
But if you had to pay for Linux now, would you actually pay, premium dollar, Vista dollars for it?
Well, in some cases, you probably would. In fact, people do. There are commercial supported
Red Hat,
paid versions of these. Yeah, Red Hat is one, and the Novell one. What's it called?
Yes, that one.
What's it called? Someone help me. Seuss.
Susie.
Or Susie, or whatever it's called. I never know how to pronounce it.
Thank you, Grant. Susie, he's very quick on the... Yeah, he must be listening on air. He's not on delay on the...
There's commercial paid supported versions of those operating systems that people use, and people use them in a big way, believe me, hosting major systems on them.
What those organisations are charging for is not the source code or the operating system itself.
No, they're charging for the support. Yep.
And very, very good technical working knowledge of those systems, yep, which you can call on.
But the systems are extremely robust, and I'm a Fedora user, you're an Ubuntu user, but Fedora 9, it's very mature as a product. It installs really smoothly and just works out of the box in a really nice way.
Very, very stable.
How resource hungry is it compared to, say, Windows?
Uh,
Dep- Depends on how it's set up.
Definitely comparable. It does depend how you set it up.
Because you guys used to swear by putting it on an old machine and it would run really well on an old 386, as Dr. Ron did.
That's if you don't install a graphical user interface and you just use it as a server.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, you can get away with running it on lower level hardware. But
if you load it up on comparable fast things,
it's comparable or somewhat better in its resource usage. You know, if you want a fancy user interface with really nice features and windows that slide around and nicely animated and all that sort of stuff, the same as you get with Vista but looks different.
It's
going to use resources comparable to Vista, but I reckon it's going to do it somewhat smoother.
In the past 2 years alone, the Fedora organization estimates that 3,200 developers and 200 companies have contributed to the Linux kernel. Is it Linux or Linux?
Linux.
You say tomato, I say tomato.
That's why I ask. Yeah. Two dogs.
Yeah.
No, it's Linux. It's Linux, yeah.
Linux, okay.
Very JD good. Says Linux. I
do. Well, it's Linus was the founder. But anyway.
There's actually an audio clip of Linus
saying it.
Linus saying Linux. It's a little bit difficult to get exactly what he says, to be fair, because he has a very strong accent from his native country. He's from Finland.
Hmm. If it's a contraction of the words Linus Unix, it's probably Linux, I suppose.
Yeah.
Yes.
Contentious issue, really, isn't it? We should do a poll.
Do you want to come to my reboot party? I'm going to have a reboot party in about a month.
Oh, not another one.
What do you mean, not another one? I've never had one before.
You had one a couple of weeks back, if I remember. Or didn't it get off the ground?
No, I didn't have one.
I'll have to pull out the audio from one of the Tech Talk radios. I'm sure it was only recently.
No, 1,000 days. I've got one server that's been running for 1,000 days. That's the uptime. And I'm going to have to do a reboot because I just need to get some new kernel software updated.
Yes, it needs some updates.
It does need some updates.
For that long, yeah.
But that gives you an idea of the stability of the operating system. Mm. If you try
a Windows server would run that long, you could leave it powered up. It's just don't have the auto update.
It would go slower and slower and slower.
It would come to a grinding halt. It would be completely unusable, Andrew. But 1,000 days, you don't have to reboot a Linux system.
Someone's asked on the chat whether the security is still good with Linux. And the answer to that is yes. You still get lots of updates and you still have lots of security problems because anything that complex is going to have its issues. But the thing with Linux that you don't get with Microsoft, you know, this latest update from Microsoft, no one quite knows what it does or why it doesn't and why it didn't work properly and all that sort of stuff. At least with Linux, you've got anyone who can understand C programming can have a look at the source code and see why it doesn't work and see why it's insecure or see why it doesn't reboot properly and fix it. So you get the security advantage is that there's a lot more what they call eyes on the code, a lot more people who can watch it and see what's going on and understand why things are right or not right.
How often do they bring out a new version of Linux? Because Red Hat wants to be really often.
They'll bring out patches as often as Microsoft does.
And they have bizarre names for it, don't they?
Bear in mind that Linux as an operating system isn't one fixed unit. There's the Linux kernel that Linus Torvalds created, which is one project, but all the little programs and all the little features that go into it are all developed by different groups at different times, and that's why you use a package like Fedora or Ubuntu or SUS or whoever it might happen to be to bring all those together, and they're a whole different team that bring those together, and the updates will come out. They'll release an update to some component of it as the team that develops that component updates it. So, there's lots of... it's a lot more complex and a lot more spread out. It's not so monolithic as it is with...
But if you go back to the point of this story, which was putting a value on it, if you actually put a value on it as a commercial product, then it actually wouldn't be an open source thing because people would lock it down so you couldn't actually look at the source code.
And that would drop the value of it remarkably.
Yeah.
Because part of the value is that it's open, yeah.
Yeah, so the reason it's supposedly worth so much is that it's open, but the fact that it's open means it's actually free.
Mm. It's good, isn't it? All right, let's moving right along because we're rapidly running out of time and I wanted to get this one in tonight, which is a GD sent across to me during the course of the week.
Hi, GD.
Sticky tape, a source of X-ray vision. Now, this is on ABC Science Report.
I missed this one.
Did you?
Yeah. Okay.
Sticky tape is not only see-through, it can also help you see through objects by emitting X-rays.
What?
Peeling tape from a roll of sticky tape releases tiny bursts of X-rays that are powerful enough to take images of bones and fingers and hands, according to a study appearing in the latest issue of Nature.
Now I know. know what my four-year-old son was doing all yesterday. He used an entire roll of tape in about an hour, and my wife and I was like, what on earth was he doing with this tape? He was x-raying his hands, clearly.
That's it. Absolutely. Now, this is really good for radio, but I actually have a picture here on the thing that came through, and you can sort of see the x-ray. See the bone there through the sticky tape?
Uh-huh.
Anyway,
I think you can get an SMS picture like that on your phone, can't you?
I think you probably can. The unusual discovery was made by the University of California at Los Angeles.
Someone's having a laugh.
So, no, that's real.
That the Soviet scientists in the 1950s found that sticky tape, when separated at the right speed, released pulses in the X-ray part of the energy spectrum.
And that's the thing. You've got to unroll it at exactly the right speed. And it's to do with the fact that as it separates...
Yeah, Dr. Ron, Exhibit A, have a cast your eyes
between the two
there.
Different layers of tape. And as that charge discharges, it emits radiation. You've got to unroll it at the right speed, and you've probably got to unroll it in a vacuum as well. So it's not exactly something you're going to be doing every day. But it is interesting technology, and it does point to a possible new way to generate X-rays cheaply.
I wonder if it's brand
for
dependent.
Use in perhaps
the 3M X-ray. Yeah.
And absolutely.
Yeah, well.
We're running out of time, Jess. Back with more in a moment.
You're listening.
Dr. Ron?
Here I am listening.
Residual powers. And I've got some residual powers.
You can't turn off CDMA.
In terms of the volume,
over a standard fingerprints. Now, this
we may have digressed.
Talk radio.
Bill Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600
kilometers. Don't open things with those good that you're not expecting, even if they do a thing.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
I went to the local electronics shop during the course of the week and I bought a new gadget.
A new toy.
I figured, how easy could I make my life if my wife and children could turn on the
how
DVD.
How easy could you make your wife if you what?
My life.
Yeah.
If my wife
yeah.
could turn on the DVD recorder,
yeah.
television set, and all that sort of stuff in one foul swoop.
Right.
To which the answer is, I still haven't worked out how to program it yet. I bought a universal remote control, pretty much on Adam's say-so. It's the Harmony 525 device here, which I have here. Exhibit B in the studio this evening.
Very pretty.
Exhibit A was the sticky tape, but this is Exhibit B.
Yes.
Now, I went down and bought one of these great devices on the pretense that, hey, this is going to be really good. Now,
Was it easy?
I still haven't got it worked out yet. I plugged it in, you connect it to the web and you do that. But nonetheless, in theory, it's really good. But there's a couple of devices you don't want to turn on and you don't want it to turn off. But as soon as I get it sorted, I'll let you know. But at this point in time, it's a very clever little gadget.
So,
it's the only remote control with a USB device that you plug into your laptop to program.
Are the products you're trying to program for it, are they big brand names?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay. So easy enough to find the codes?
Absolutely. Well, you don't do that. You plug into the net and it does it for you. You don't need codes. It does it. It's a really easy from that point of view.
Very cool.
But you just need to be able to tell it to, I don't want the DVD player to come on when I want to watch television. I'm still working on that one. But other than that, it works really, really well. So there you go. That's the Tech Talk Radio Gadget of the Week. You'll pick them up at white goods shops for about $60. And if you're prepared to sit down and spend a couple of hours programming it up and making sure it works right, it's the gadget to make your life easier.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
Okay, here's one for anyone who's interested in developing a website, which is probably nearly everybody these days. Google wants a thing called sitemaps, sitemap.xml, which you plug into your webmaster tools.
I know about sitemaps.
Do you? Well, if you want to generate one electronically where you don't have to do anything at all, you just point to your web browser and say, make me a sitemap, please, to upload to Google, there's one. And it's called, well, if you go to www.xml-sitemaps.com, you'll find a sitemap generator there.
I've always just created them manually in a text editor.
Too hard. Go to this site.
You can have them automated for you.
Plug in your website and they'll give you the first 500 pages of your website. Absolutely free to upload to Google. So there's your sitemap, an XML sitemap generator for you. What do you reckon?
That's very good, very useful.
You'll find all your hidden pages too.
Yeah, I'll have a look at that one.
It follows all your links and stuff. It's very good. Then you can add it manually afterwards. Good starting spot at least.
Yeah, definitely gives you the framework for something to build on.
So the Tech Talk Radio website of the week, XML sitemap generators for all those people building websites.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Showtime. Missed it by that much.
I know nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
And the Odd Spot this week comes from the Netherlands, where a Dutch court has convicted two teenagers of theft for stealing virtual items in a computer game and sentenced them to community service.
So they've nicked something that doesn't exist.
Well, it does exist, but it exists in virtual reality. So
is it of any value?
Well, that's the point. The Radio Netherlands reports that two teenagers, 15 and 14-year-olds, found guilty of using violence to rob a 13-year-old classmate of virtual property in a multiplayer online game called RuneScape.
The world's come to this.
Ooh.
Beaten up for your virtual candlestick holder.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right.
RuneScape.
They kicked and struck the victim and threatened him with a knife on several occasions.
On the virtual world?
No, in the real world.
In the real world.
In the real world.
For their virtual things.
To get hold of virtual goods from within the game that presumably the 13-year-old had paid real money to get access to.
Oh, goodness.
Advanced features or virtual property within the game RuneScape.
Right. There you go.
So the virtual goods are goods under Dutch law, so it is theft. This comes from the Dutch broadcaster Radio Netherlands. Yeah.
There you go. Strange but true. All right, you've been listening to Tech Talk Radio. Same time next week. Six shows to go. Looking forward to it. See you soon.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron Panlis, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC and 3XX in Melbourne, Cairns FM, Switch 1197 in Brisbane, 95.3 Huon FM in Tasmania, Queer FM in WA, and Stop and Go Radio in the United States. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.